The opinions expressed on the following program do not necessarily reflect the views of KTXT, its management, Texas Tech University, or any living person. This is the Devil's Advocate.
Please allow me to introduce myself.
DG, that never gets old in the open. Hey, Dr. Kelly Caulfield, Dr. K, coming to you from the College of Media and Communication here at Texas Tech University at KTXT 88.1 The Raider. You can join our conversation, by the way, online on Twitter at The Raider 881 or on Facebook, The Raider 881. This is a best of show. Jordan, do you know why it's a best of show?
No, I don't.
We talked about it before the show. It's not pre-recorded. It's not a show from the past. It's a best of because all the other hosts bagged on us for Thanksgiving, but Jordan Lejeune and I are still here, and in the booth behind the glass is DG Derek Ginter, the general manager of KTXT.
Hello.
So all of you enjoy your Thanksgiving turkey while we're here working, but that's fine. That's why it's a best of
show.
It
won't get any better than this.
Yeah, it's just Jordan and I are going to argue for the next
hour.
And
it won't get any better than this. It's all downhill from here.
Sadly, that's just true. So we'll have some fun with it, though. But anyway, lots of love out to our many co-hosts. They're all good. They've all been supportive all semester. They'll all be back in January, but we're not going to name them because they're all home eating turkey dinner while we're here working. So anyway, this should be fun because this is the show Jordan's been wanting for a while now, because the rule is he has to be polite to the other co-hosts, but he can unleash mercilessly on me. And I actually like that. I think
today will be fun.
Yeah, I get paid either way, so it's all good. So anything in the news this week? Have you heard? It's kind of been a slow news week, hasn't it?
Oh, of course. It's been so slow. You know, the world's about to end.
Yeah.
You know, nuclear bombs everywhere.
I think the negotiation actually ended that risk of the world about to end, didn't it? Didn't those talks in Geneva put a rest to that?
I don't know. I still think Israel's up to some shenanigans.
Yeah, and it's too bad Matthew Riley's not here, because he would be uncorking right now on Netanyahu, on Israel. But we'll channel him in a little while. We'll get to that. There was a little news out of D.C. on Thursday. I heard a little attention about this. In fact, I'm hearing surprisingly little attention about this. Of course, you know why.
Oh, well, the liberal media is going to hide everything.
Because of the liberal media. They won't cover this. So it really intriguing to me, since 1789, since the founding of since the Constitutional Convention in Philadelphia, the Senate has had rules in place, a very unique body. The House of Representatives, of course, is a majority rule body because it's based on population. And so you're represented there. In fact, that was the origin of the three-fifths rule that gets turned on its ear all the time, was the fight over representation. Folks in the North didn't want to count slaves. The Southern slaveholders did want to count them as an entire person for purposes of gaining influence in D.C. Big fight over the bicameral legislature. And the compromise was, we need two bodies, one which will represent just each state gets two representatives. That's the Senate, of course, and that's reflective of smaller states with tiny populations. So, for example, Wyoming has one congressman, two senators, and then places like California, Texas, Florida, New York, up to 50 congressmen and two senators. Well, the Senate has always been this place with a sacred tradition of honoring minority viewpoints for that reason, going all the way back to the Constitutional Convention until now.
That's a very poetic way to put it.
Can you hear the violins? Can you feel it? Okay.
Can I just say that history and civics with Dr. K is almost as interesting as news presentation too with Dr. K?
Hey, thanks. I appreciate it. And they're both fiction. Is that what you're saying?
Very much so.
Okay, nice.
So that's how we got the Bowl Championship Series. I always wondered.
Hey, it said so on my website. It must be true. So anyway, what happened is last Thursday, the Senate, and this is not the first time this has been threatened. In fact, Republicans vociferously threatened to do this. But, and I'll argue in a minute, never had the cojones to pull the trigger. The Senate, without much ado at all, decided they were going to pull a trigger. And for all nominees except U.S. Supreme Court nominees, they now need only a 51-vote majority. And actually, it's a 50-vote majority because the president of the Senate is Joe Biden, the tiebreaker. It's shocking because until now, you've always needed at least 60, and at some points in the past, 67 votes in the Senate, two-thirds majority, to get folks approved, to get appointees approved and the like, especially on courts, federal courts, which are lifetime appointments. And the Democrats, with very little discussion and with no warning, just pulled this trigger, what's been called the nuclear, actually what Democrats called the nuclear option while W was the president and Republicans were threatening to do this. because of stonewalling. So, Jordan, you're going to, of course, argue that there's a good reason for this. So why don't you go ahead and try?
Well,
wrong.
As you mentioned, well, like, first point I'd like to make is that it is nice to see Republicans and Democrats finally agreeing with each other. It's just unfortunate that it's 8 years later because we've had both sides essentially just flip-flop, which tells you a lot about our politics. But we have seen an unprecedented amount of obstructionism in the Senate. I mean, Republicans simply refuse to let the president do what he's supposed to do, nominating judges, filling vacant seats. That's what he's supposed to do. And they are simply stonewalling and not letting any of his nominations go through. So something had to be done, or else our bipartisanship will just continue to get worse.
Well, and the argument now, of course, is, I love how you said that, by the way, very elegant to see them agreeing just 8 years apart. And it's funny because you, I think, would acknowledge this. Republicans were all for this and touting it while W was in office. Again, because Democrats were stonewalling his appointees, he couldn't get his appointees in. Democrats are saying, oh, these are radical appointees. We're not going to approve them. It became a political bludgeon. And the Republicans talked about for weeks, threatened to use the nuclear option. I think that's an important difference, which is they talked about it for a long time, but never pulled the trigger. Democrats didn't talk about it at all and just abruptly pulled the trigger without any warning. So,
which is funny, because if you had simply looked at our political landscape over the last 15 years and had to give those actions to one side, wouldn't you think the Republicans would be the ones more likely to just do it without any negotiation?
No. I think you're giving much too credit to Democrats to do the right thing. No,
please. No, what I'm saying is that Democrats most of the time are spineless, which I say as a proud Democrat. Most of the time, we just kind of fold, you know. I'm happy for once that we didn't, that we actually stuck to our guns on something. Yeah, it doesn't happen very often.
Very much.
There's plenty of room for reptilian metaphors for both sides of the aisle.
Well, you know, and that's the interesting point, is Republicans were for this, even though they didn't do it in 07. The Democrats whined vociferously, used harsh language like it's unconstitutional, it's a violation of fundamental rules, it throws 223 years of tradition, 224 years of tradition on its ear. Heinous. The Democrats came up with the terminology nuclear option, and yet now it's okay. And the Republicans are all saying, oh no, this is heinous. How dare you do something we were talking about doing 8 years ago?
Exactly.
This is horrible.
And you know just as well as I do that if, say, Chris Christie wins in 2014, suddenly this will be perfectly fine again.
Well, and that's exactly. And some of the Republicans, I think, and smartly and rightly so, said, look, be careful what you wish for, because this is something that could easily be turned around you if, God willing, a Republican ever wins the White House again, which I don't see anytime soon, but you never know.
That makes me happy. But honestly, just from a logical standpoint, I agree with this, to me, because essentially what they changed is not you've always just needed an up and down majority to get someone approved. This is simply to bring about cloture. So the idea that you only need 51 votes to get a nominee passed, but you need 67 just to get the up and down voter 61, that doesn't logically make any sense.
Well, and he raises a valid point, which is cloture is obscure Senate only, what the hell terminology, for a vote to, we're going to have a vote to discuss whether we will keep discussing this. So 2/3, or actually it was 60 votes, 60 senators had to vote for permission to continue talking. And then if you got to that point, then Majority Leader Reid could bring it to the floor for a vote. And anything that got past that cloture vote, that 60 margin vote of, yeah, let's go ahead and continue conversation about it, anything that got past that could then be voted on by 51 senators. And in fact, appointees eventually would get to that point where, and you'd see protest votes, you'd see appointees getting approved by 51, 52, 56 votes after they got past the cloture hurdle. And that's exactly right. And it's been used as a game. And in fact, I'm trying to find the number. I know it's been many, 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 many appointees blocked by the Republicans. And the Republicans claimed it's because of the radicalism of Obama's appointees, the exact same language used by Democrats about the radicalism of the Bush appointees. Truth be known, most of these appointees came out of academia, courts, the corporate world, Wall Street, and none of them are any more radical than our representatives and senators, most likely. In fact,
well,
I suspect
maybe your representatives and senators.
Okay, yeah, exactly. My Tea Party representatives.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I don't claim any of the Texas senators.
And the Tea Party folks are the ones that have been leading this partisan fight to stonewall, to use the filibuster, the virtual filibuster, just this vote, this cloture
vote. I'm not going to say what I really want to say their motivation is.
Yeah, I'm sure. Okay, yeah, go ahead. Go ahead. Run with the stereotype. Go ahead.
No, yeah. No, I won't do it. I'd like to make it to my car alive today.
They don't like appointees by this president.
Exactly.
And here's the argument I always make. They don't like appointees by this president, much like I don't like the policies of this president, because this president's policies are much like Hillary Clinton's, Bill Clinton's, Harry Reid's. You can do your own math. I just don't like liberals.
Oh, sure.
That's why I'm across the table from Jordan.
Well, the problem with the Tea Party is the idea that they suddenly care about the debt and taxes, but they didn't for 8 years under W.
Well, and actually,
now, what's the big difference between W and good old Barack Obama?
It's just the R and the D after the name. I keep telling you.
Sure.
I vociferate. It's a valid point, and I strongly and often complain, and my wife will tell you she got tired of it. I would yell at W all the time about spending. When he created the Department of Homeland Security, an enormous new state bureaucracy, when he expanded Medicaid, when he put in the expanded funding for prescriptions. I screamed every time he did that, and I was screaming like, where in the world are my Republicans? Because you're sure not on Capitol Hill or in the White House. What the heck? And I never got anywhere with it. Completely valid argument. In the same way, it's a completely valid argument to ask, where did the Democrats, who called this the nuclear option and thought it was such a radical policy, where did they go? And actually, that's an interesting argument, because it was not the senators largely who were in place back then. What happened is a lot of the new senators were the ones that pulled the trigger and decided to vote for this. So actually, a bunch of new folks, new to office, were the ones leading the charge. New Democrats were the ones leading the charge for this. And
Democrats with backbones.
Well,
Democrats, change that we needed.
Democrats with more of an ideological perspective, maybe more leftist, more liberal, more hardcore liberal Democrats. And along with that comes backbone, because they're ideologues, much like the Tea Partiers. It'd be interesting to see if these kinds of, and I think pulling this trigger on these Senate rules was a pretty dramatic move, and I think it really hasn't gotten the attention I think it should have gotten.
Well, the problem is that I'd imagine a majority of Americans don't actually understand how the Senate works.
Exactly.
So you can't make a big news story out of something that most people don't understand.
How do you spell cloture?
Exactly.
Okay, sorry. Yeah. No, I understand. I think it's a valid point. By the way, it doesn't apply to everything. It does apply to all appointees for cabinet posts, for federal courts, not to U.S. Supreme Court judges.
Fix the fact that filibusters can still be used for legislation,
right,
which is another area that definitely needs to be fixed, because it still doesn't make any sense.
I will say it would be nice to see filibusters done in the traditional way, you know, like Rand Paul, like Ted Cruz, as much as you want to make fun of them, and Ted Cruz especially, reading from Dr. Seuss. Come on, that's too easy.
Which was hilarious, because he was reading a book about someone who just absentmindedly hates on something until he tries it, as he was filibustering something that he's absentmindedly hating and refuses to try.
it's pretty funny, though. And the other thing is, like, whenever I've read Dr. Seuss to my kids, and yes, I have, it didn't sound like the way he read Dr. Seuss to, but I don't know. I did come
it's
out of broadcast
Cuban
journalism.
Canadian influence in his life.
Maybe that's it. Maybe it's just I've been beating you guys over the head for years about speaking conversationally when you do journalism. So it could be that factor, too. The biggest reason, I think, for them pulling the trigger at this time. And this is curious, because I want to ask you about this. I'm really curious whether there was an agenda behind this that people have not discussed. It's possible we're just prescient and smarter than everybody else. Or I could be completely wrong, which is more likely. First, the reality...
You said it, not me.
you will in a minute, though. The reality is there are some nominees to the D.C. Circuit, which is a very influential circuit. It's considered the most important influential federal court behind the U.S. Supreme Court. Many of its rulings find their way across the street to the U.S. Supreme Court. And Obama's appointees, he has not been able to get his appointees in place in the D.C. Circuit. A lot of pundits have argued that D.C. Circuit is the reason, that entrenches with the Republicans, is the reason that Democrats push this through to try and pad that court, if you will, while Obama's in the White House. I think a second argument is Obama envisions that he and the Democrats in the Senate just might lose that body in the next year over Obamacare. Is he thinking, let's blow this up so we can load the courts as quick as possible before I lose the opportunity to do this, possibly a year from January 2015, when possibly 8 or 10 new Republican senators are sworn in? Of course, it's not a sure thing, but I'm just curious if that's the strategy.
Absolutely, I think it is. But here's the thing. I don't understand why it would be said like that's something nefarious, when essentially all he'd be doing is what every politician president has done, you know, since judicial appointments were made official. You know, this is what we do. As much as I love FDR, we all know how he screwed up trying to add more Supreme Court justices. This is what politicians do. They take their ideology, they find judges that meet those ideologies, and they put them in court positions. It's what happens. We accept it as Americans when we vote for people. So the idea that this is somehow a nefarious, you know, strategy doesn't add up to me.
Love that word, by the way. Can't get enough of that. Quick history lesson. FDR was elected 32, took office in 33, did not have, he did not have support. That was his first term in office. And it was a Republican Congress, and he couldn't get anything done. He was frustrated by it. It was an overwhelmingly conservative majority Supreme Court because it had been appointed by previous Republican presidents.
Oh, the good old days.
That ticked him off. He didn't get anything done until after the 1934 midterm election when he won a landslide of Democrat support. So he proposed a rule to increase the Supreme Court from 9 to 15 justices and allow him to appoint 6 who all would have been liberal supporters of his policies. It's actually a huge scandal that most people don't know about because they think, oh, FDR, you know, I know his brother's up on Mount Rushmore, but he's next, you know, and there's this halo over his head. And it's like, no, he was a dirty, rotten New York politician.
As it should be, you know, he kind of just saved us through World War II.
Oh, for crying out loud. Know. Yeah, he delayed and extended the Great Depression for many, many years until World War II saved us from it. But
No, you're absolutely right. World War II saved us from the Great Depression, but he kept us motoring along until then.
Yeah, the economy was strong enough that he couldn't even destroy it with his ridiculous policies.
That's so absurd.
The father of
clearly, you need to take another history lesson because you don't know what you're talking about.
I like the history from mine instead. Anyway, nefarious, great word, and I apply it to FDR. I think that's his middle name. I mean, his first name. So,
well, hope you enjoy learning Japanese.
Well said. All right, let's do this. Let's take a break, and we'll throw cold water on ourselves and come back and move on possibly to the next topic, possibly more about that, but back with the devil's advocate in 2 minutes.
Children.
Hey, welcome back to the Devil's Advocate on KTXT, the Raider. I cannot speak. Derek, maybe you should do this part. I'm just kidding. He's the radio.
Hey,
professor.
Welcome back to the Raider, KTXT. Better. Is that any better?
Yeah, that's channeling okay. Josh Cook. I like that. Or Anthony Hall. I can't channel Anthony Hall unless I have a smoke first. Because
I have to have a Twinkie to channel Anthony.
Yikes.
Welcome back to KTXT, the Raider 88.1 on the Devil's Advocate. It must be Wednesday afternoon. And you can join the conversation again on Twitter at the Raider 881 or on Facebook, the Raider 881. And we'd love to have you guys participate. And we'll look at those comments and include those. And Anna Lavis, I think, is still looking for folks to ask her out on Twitter. So, yeah, take a chance. Anyway, take a look. So Jordan, should we talk about abortion or should we talk about abortion?
Abortions for all.
Okay. Yeah, you know what I'm saying here, because we're talking about two different policies, both in the courts, both different plans. Well, one's a health plan. One is claimed to be a health plan. That's Yikes. The Texas one. Should we start with the Texas one?
Sure. Let's talk about how Texas is screwing everything up.
Says the fellow from southern Louisiana. So, okay.
Which means I know a lot about screwing things
God,
up.
My God, Texas. Nice. So Texas, as many of you know, and this is what made Wendy Davis famous, Texas in the, always forget it, it's the second or third, I think it was the second special session.
It was the second special session.
Very quickly passed what they couldn't pass at the end of the first special session because of a filibuster. They passed a new, more restrictive abortion rule that required abortion clinics to have access to emergency admitting privileges, to have hospital admitting privileges, to meet the same health standards as outpatient care centers. And most abortion clinics did not meet those. So about a third of Texas abortion clinics, I think it's up to 9 now, closed. There are 36 in the state and just fewer than 10 closed, including a big one in Austin. And that one closed. The one in Lubbock closed for a different reason, an administrative reason. But it did make it harder for women in Texas to get an abortion. This case went to a lawsuit. First court ruled, yeah, that's ridiculous. You can't do that. It's unconstitutional. And the law was thrown out. The second court said, nope, that's not the case. The law is constitutional. A 3-judge panel of women, ironically, in Texas said no. That
traitors.
Exactly. The 3 women in federal court said, no, I think the law is constitutional. They reinstituted it. And so right now it's bouncing around to different courts, and it's still controversial, and it's going to attract a lot of attention. It bounced through the Fifth Circuit, which is New Orleans. So there's your problem right there. and what's going to happen is it is going to be appealed. It's not settled law yet, but the Fifth Circuit said the provisions of the law could stay in place while the appeal goes forward. And so that's where we are now. We're expecting some other rulings coming, but it was kind of a shock because this was set aside for a little while and then quickly reinstated. And some women in Texas, it's becoming much more difficult for them to go out and get abortions. And so that's where we are. So about 2/3 of the clinics remaining are still open in Texas, but they're having to institute these new policies, get new privileges that didn't exist before.
And of course, it tends to make things difficult on women in rural areas, where, you know, now looking at Lubbock, the one in Lubbock had to close, so it's a ridiculous amount of mileage that would have to be traveled to get anywhere. So, of course, I don't know Texas very well. The only places I've ever been in Texas are Lubbock.
Mexico's not that far.
Is it really? Yikes. Hey, what did the Fox News contributor say? This is the time to buy coat hanger stock. So.
Oh, gosh. Oh, that's horrible.
It is horrible, but you know what? They're your cronies. So.
Well, so the issue here, and so we use Lubbock as a great example because the one clinic here stopped. Now, again, that was an administrative issue unrelated to this, but the clinic here is closed. And so think about Lubbock, and of course, it's 5 hours from just about anywhere. Women were coming here from Abilene, Amarillo, from rural parts of West Texas. To put it in perspective, Randy Nagebauer is representative of the 19th Congressional District, which I think is 21 counties. That puts in perspective 700,000 people
poor,
spread across 21
poor,
counties.
Those poor, poor people.
Yeah, okay. So, and he has new ads out, which we won't talk about. But he and John Cornyn are trying to be the most radically right-wing gun-toting candidates they can so they don't face a Tea Party challenge. That's another issue. But yeah, it already was a situation where women drove 2, 3, 4 hours to get to Lubbock to have an abortion. Now they have to go farther. Now they have to go upwards of 5 hours to get to the Dallas-Fort Worth area to get access to an abortion. There was an interview on one of the local news stations last week, which was pretty remarkable. They got a woman to come in, had an abortion scheduled. This was in Austin for the next morning, and they called her Thursday night from the clinic and said, your Friday morning procedure has been canceled because of this ruling, these three women in this court, and they've shut down the clinic. And it was pretty remarkable that somebody would go on camera in public and discuss this. And yet that's how she felt. She felt like she clearly had this constitutional right to an abortion. It was just a medical procedure in her mind, and she felt strongly about it and went on. I thought that was a powerful, informative interview, even if I don't agree with her position. And I wish Anna was here because she'd be more vociferously vocal about this than me. But fascinating to see people at this point, now 40 years on from Roe versus Wade almost, being comfortable having an open conversation about this. And so interesting that these clinics are set. And
well, that story also proves the big point of why it was so disappointing that the U.S. Supreme Court ruled yesterday that it was acceptable for the lower court to put these provisions back in place as the law continues to move its way through the court, which that story proves the perfect example of why it should have been the opposite way around. If we're not exactly sure that these laws are constitutional, which we don't know yet because it's continued to go through appeals, the restrictions that the law places shouldn't be allowed to continue to go through. Look at the entire argument about this is that these admitted privilege requirements places an undue burden on women who are seeking an abortion. So it doesn't make any sense that while we're deciding the constitutionality of that, if we're going to place undue restrictions on women trying to get abortions. So the idea that the court allowed the restrictions to stay in place, just completely wrong, completely bass ackwards, as we would say back in South Louisiana.
This is a shallow callous analogy, but it's akin, frankly, to the instant replay rule in sports, which is the call stands as called unless there's enough evidence to overturn it. And essentially, that's what the court ruled, which is while this goes through the appeals process, it's in place. I will
point
out,
but this isn't sports. This is the real life.
It's more serious, and there's not a legal precedent for this. It's perfectly legal and in previous precedents to cut this both ways. You could say, no, we're going to set aside these provisions while we appeal, or we're going to have them in place while we appeal.
To me, if someone was challenging the death penalty, you wouldn't say, yeah, go ahead with the executions. Yeah. So to me, it's the same thing.
We'll
although some people
week.
Might say an abortion is an execution, but that's an argument for a different day.
Well, and that's explains the passion on the argument. And I've always been curious about, and I'll say this even though this is a controversial position, I've always thought that that's a much more compelling argument and explains the anti-abortion passion much better than the pro-abortion rights passion, which is frankly the pro-abortion rights passion overwhelmingly is we're simply looking for this convenient after-the-fact form of birth control. And that's what's at issue.
I don't agree with that at all because I am incredibly pro-choice, and I believe that, but you might be surprised to know that my personal beliefs on abortion are actually quite conservative. I don't believe in abortions other than if the mother's health is in danger or if the fetus itself has no viable life. But to me, there's no legal precedent to say that a woman can't do what she wants to do with her body. And most of the people that I've talked to, at least in our generation, who are pro-choice, that's their reasoning. So this idea that it's, oh, we want birth control, I don't think that passes the mustard.
Well, at least access to it. But that's an interesting argument. I've heard many people say it's hypocritical to be pro-choice, but anti-abortion. I don't think it's hypocritical at all. And I understand your position. I get it. But that's can be controversial.
No, to me, it's more hypocritical to be anti-abortion yet be pro-death penalty.
Well,
there's quite a few of those on your side of the aisle.
Yeah,
you know that to be true.
I've never understood that argument. There's a clear delineation between innocent and guilty. And I think there's no gray area or confusion there at all. It's clearly, if you've gone out and killed a family of four in the course of a robbery and burned their house down, that's clearly not the same as an innocent unborn baby being murdered in the womb. I'm sorry, but anybody who can't see that difference, that's just an absurd argument.
Life is a life. Isn't that what Jesus said?
Well,
I'm pretty sure that's what Jesus said.
That's a compelling argument, but to equate the death penalty with abortion is just absurd. Catholic teaching is consistent on that, and it's one of the things I respected about Catholic teaching, which is
you know very well that you're not going to win me over with Catholic teaching.
No, I'm not trying to sway you with a religious argument. I'm not going to go there. And if you want to see the nuclear option right here in the audio booth, yeah, that's where I'm going to go. So, Jordan, in the name of the Father, no, sorry.
Yikes, been there, done that.
I had a friend who used to say, my dominoes beat your dominoes, and he'd do the sign of the cross with his hand. It was pretty funny.
Fantastic.
By the way, this stuff's going on not just in Texas. New Mexico has pushed for an abortion ban. That one got voted down by voters, but it was narrow. Portland, Maine, there's a new buffer zone ordinance, which actually restricts how close protesters can get. So there's sort of a push going on in different areas. New York's talking about whether to look at fetal rights and extend those to pregnant women so that they get some kind of special protection in crimes. So that the envelope's being stretched pro and against abortion around the country. This will and must end up in D.C. back at the Supreme Court, and I think a number of these cases will. I think that was the intention of the Texas law, and similar laws to the one in Texas have been overturned in other states.
Wouldn't it be great if we had already decided this? Wouldn't that just be so fantastic if we had already decided this? Exactly.
Yeah, okay.
You know, if we had already decided that it was legal and that it
maybe
was a constitutional right.
Wade.
Yeah, you know, maybe, you know, it would be so great if we could just stop fighting these battles that we've already fought.
Okay, well, you're going to hate this, as you usually do, but I'm going to use the procedural argument, which you're probably tired of. And my only problem with Roe versus Wade, you know what it is? See if you can guess what it was.
Yeah, and you say the Supreme Court overstepped its bounds.
Right, it did. It was perfectly fine for them to rule that this law is not constitutional, but then they need to remand it back to the legislature to fix it. And instead, the Supreme Court wrote law, and that's unconstitutional, violates the purview of their branch of government, and that was my only complaint. And again, at state levels, if Massachusetts wants to offer unlimited free abortions right up into the third trimester, and Alabama wants to say no abortions ever, it's a crime, I'm fine with that. It's up to the states to make those decisions.
Oh, hey, and hey, let's go back 10 years further and let Alabama vote on whether or not they want to be segregated. That makes perfect sense.
And clearly there are places for these fights to be made, and it's a negotiation. And it's
no, tough, but I literally want you to answer that. I want you to say on the air that you would be willing to let Alabama vote to whether or not they would desegregate.
No, segregation's clearly wrong, and that needed federal challenge. I concede that one.
Okay, exactly, so then what difference is there here? You're either pro states' rights or you're against states' rights. There can't be any gray area here.
I'm for states' rights, but that was a clear moral argument, and you know, you're not going to get me to back up on that one. It's a great question, but sorry, no, not going to say
you, such a wiffle waffle.
Oh, for crying out loud.
I didn't realize I was here with John Kerry.
Oh, well done. Yeah, and who else was on the flip-flopper? So funny, if you haven't seen it, go to Jib Jab and look at the old George Bush, John Kerry stuff. It's hysterical. All right, so should we move on to, we talked about abortion. Should we now talk about abortion?
Yes.
Okay. And we were actually arguing about this before we started today. It has to do with the Affordable Care Act. By the way, I'm going to go on record and say I am much more in favor of the Affordable Care Act than I am of that evil Obamacare. I think
exactly.
The Affordable Care Act is far better than
exactly.
That evil Obamacare.
Keep your government hands off my Medicare.
Tell you what, Medicaid has seen 10 times more enrollment than Obamacare has. By the way, if you hadn't caught up on the joke there, Jay Leno, your favorite nighttime host, who else? Who's the other guy that's on ABC?
Kimmel.
Have both
Jimmy
gone
Kimmel.
Out. Jimmy Kimmel, they've both made fun of Affordable Care Act versus Obamacare. And don't be embarrassed if you don't know that they are the same thing, in fact, just two names for the same thing, because lots and lots of Americans don't know that. It's been a lot of fun to watch on late night television.
Dr. K should be more embarrassed to admit that he watches Jay Leno.
I love Jay Leno. It's mostly the car collection, though. That's just me. I'm an old car guy.
That is something so wrong with you.
Okay, yeah. As if that's the only thing, right?
No,
so.
But it's the prevailing one. you could have the worst politics imaginable.
No, there's a bigger one.
Once you like Leno,
there's another one. There's another one that bothers you a lot about me. It has to do with my music taste.
No, yeah, but that's...
Yeah.
Leno tops all. Leno is the worst.
No, I don't like the Beatles. I never have. Oh, that drives God. Jordan just up the wall. It drives you crazy.
How can you even be on the radio and say things
like
that?
That's a great question. I don't know. And I was on the radio then, way back then, and
yikes.
I still just never liked it.
Drinking your insurer.
Exactly. There's a bottle of, I swear it's not mine. It could be. It should be. But
could
there's
be
a
mine.
Bottle of insurer next door.
It could be mine.
Yeah, I don't know. Kiera's an old soul, but I don't want to say it's hers, so I don't know. It not only could it be mine, it could be I forgot I left it in there, which would just be perfect. So the other abortion act, and there's a discussion that the Supreme Court may meet in a private conference today to discuss this, which is the Affordable Care Act, and they have certain provisions, and Jordan and I are going to argue about what this means for insurance, certain provisions in the Affordable Care Act, and it's one of the reasons some of the independent insurance policies have had to be canceled, because they don't include these things. Affordable Care Act requires coverage for birth control, requires coverage for maternity care, and for birth. These are things arguably that wouldn't be of interest to my in-laws and my father's. My father's 93, my father-in-law is 86, my mother-in-law is 83. Really not much interest in those particular provisions in Obamacare. And yet they have to pay for those because it runs up the cost, I argue artificially, so that there's money to pay for lots and lots of policies and spread the wealth. So everybody has to pay for things they don't need, which I think is one of the many absurdities in the 3,000-page Obamacare Act. The Supreme Court's looking into that, because one of the arguments is Hobby Lobby, you know, Hobby Lobby, legendary national employer, you know, one of the big ones. Jordan's shaking his head just because it
no,
had
because
to be,
I know what's coming.
It had to be Hobby Lobby.
Just hearing about this makes me so angry. And
go ahead. I'm just going to say First Amendment, and you go ahead.
First Amendment. Here's the thing. Do they hire people that are only Christians?
I assume not.
Okay, so then how can you force your religious beliefs on them?
It's a compelling argument. I hadn't thought of that. Maybe they should fire those employees and only hire Christians. That's a good idea.
Absolutely.
I think that's a
absolutely
better solution.
If you want this to happen, then you can't take. I'm sure they have tax subsidies somewhere along the line for the people they hire or the things that they do. So if you want to hire all Christian employees so that you don't want to have to cover their birth control, you can hand back any money, any cent that you ever receive from the U.S. government, you give it back, and then you can do whatever you want.
Okay.
But as long as you're taking money from the government, which I'm sure they are, then you have to abide by the rules.
And our kids in public schools. I think it's interesting because it's considered discriminatory if they were to only hire Christians, and they couldn't get away with that.
Not if they don't publicly announce job openings.
Okay, well, so if they just do it quietly on the down low, then they can. And I'm a huge advocate, I will say, of private organizations, private companies, private groups. So, for example, I've gotten in trouble over the years with Augusta National Country Club because they didn't want to admit women for years. And I thought, it's a private club. Who cares? And people's heads would explode and they would scream from the rooftops. And I'd say, who cares? It's a private club. Go form your own competing club. Problem solved. I feel strongly
about
this.
That's actually something we agree on.
Those private, well,
and coming from a huge golf fan whose favorite tournament is the Masters every year, that's especially scary.
You know, I'm more libertarian than conservative. You know that.
Yikes,
so.
That's worse, though, in my book.
Well, but I think there's a push, again, an aside. I think with an increase in new leftists in the Senate and new Tea Partiers in the Senate, I think there's going to be an increasing groundswell for libertarians, which is, you're all psycho. Just get the hell out of my way and let me live my life. So I do think if there's going to be a viable third party, that probably libertarians stand the best chance. It's a whole bunch of conservative principles and dope smoking. So you roll all those together, you get lots of liberals.
Most libertarians now refuse to live in a world that's actual, you know, realistic. You know, most of my libertarian friends, when you say, okay, so what should the tax policy be in this country? They say there should be no taxes because that's just stealing. Well, I hate to break it to you, but as long as there's been a United States
somehow.
Of America, and as long as there's going to be one, there's going to be taxes. And that's the problem I have with libertarians.
Okay, well, I advocate eliminating the federal income tax, which at one point was unconstitutional. But beyond that,
let me guess, you want a sales tax?
I love a national sales tax.
Even though that disproportionately affects the poor.
Yeah, but if you buy a yacht, you pay higher sales tax.
Yeah, but here's the thing. The less money you make, the more of your income you have to spend to survive. So
right,
therefore,
that,
you're
that,
being taxed
that
more.
That same 6 or 8% means more to someone who makes very little and is barely getting by. I completely understand that. But we also have half of Americans that pay no income tax. It'd be nice to get them in the game. So that's another issue for another day. We could argue all day. This is fun.
We could.
Hobby Lobby has said, look, some of the tenets in Obamacare, especially provisions for abortion, and there are a couple of provisions. One, abortions have to be covered. I think it's up to 18 or 20 weeks. And then the other thing is you have to have a drug abortion, basically. The morning after pill has to be covered in all of these policies under the Affordable Care Act. Hobby Lobby and some other employees have said, look, this violates our Christian sensibilities, which, by the way, are explicitly protected in the First Amendment. And so we don't feel like we should have to adhere to these rules. The federal government, of course, disagrees. This case has gone on to this case. It's called the Consetago Wood case. Sorry, easy for me to say. It's a Mennonite family that owns a furniture manufacturing business, and they're strongly opposed not only to abortion but to birth control, and they don't believe in paying this. And by the way, Jordan, you made an excellent point earlier about birth control. What was that? Do you remember paying for abortion, birth control?
Oh, the fact that if you don't want to pay for birth control, then I shouldn't have to pay for your Viagra, which is going to really creep me out to say it that way.
A scandal, and I've thought this is a scandal since I worked at a medical school 10 years ago. I've always thought this was scandalous. He raises a very valid point. Most insurers pay for Viagra, which I would argue is completely elective, shall we say, as a medicine. The argument is there are medical uses for it, especially in men who've been treated for prostate cancer, et cetera. Birth control pills have not traditionally been covered by health insurance.
They also have the same health benefits. They're not just, you know, used for what people think to avoid pregnancy. There is value that comes from taking birth control from women who are menstruating.
Sure.
As a guy, it's painful to say that, but
so
it's true.
He's embarrassed. I've been married forever and worked at the medical school, so I can talk about these things. No, regulation of the cycle, minimization of different health issues related to it. Clearly, a medical policy sort. But regardless, I just think on a moral plane, it's like they are at least equals, at least, if not, and I would argue birth control pills are more important, more mainstream than Viagra. I've always thought that was absurd and kind of offensive. And by the way, Medicare sets precedents that all of the insurance companies follow. So the pricing and policies come from Medicare. But yeah, that one has always bothered me. We're embarrassing Derek. He's blushing in there. So we'll move on to another.
Actually, I was thinking if I had an erection that lasted more than 6 hours, I could make it to Houston in record time. So I think there's some ancillary medical benefits from some of these other things. Just saying.
We better take a break and we'll come back and discuss things on the Devil's Advocate in less than 6 hours. We'll see you shortly.
Running with the devil.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocate. Dr. K here, running with the devil. Jordan Lejeune, he's right here with me.
Sorry. What I do.
Had to go there.
Nice. I've been called much worse.
With great pride. And we're at the College of Media and Communication here at Texas Tech University on the Raider 881 KTXT. Student-run radio right here at the college. So another little issue around. I wish Matthew was here because he would unleash on this one. But nice little deal involving half a dozen countries came together. So we did have a nuclear option. It had nothing to do with the real nuclear conversations going around the world, which is kind of funny to me. I'm like, nuclear option is just the manifestation of your petty little grievances on Capitol Hill, while arguably the world's most dangerous power was in talks with Germany, France, UK, the US, Saudi Arabia was hinting around the edges, and they were trying to put together this deal to halt nuclear weapon development among Iran. And Iran made some concessions in exchange for some concessions in the provisions against them right now. So, for example, Iran is now allowed to export gold. They're allowed to export oil with some limits for the next 6 months while talks continue. Their enrichment program is limited to enriching uranium to 5% purity, which is high enough quality to use in a generator, not nearly high enough quality.
Before a reactor.
Yeah.
The generator is what makes electricity.
Oh, yeah.
To run the generator, you need the reactor.
To boil the water in the reactor.
That's
and then
it.
To run the generator. Thank you. Good save. He knows that because we use a small illegal nuclear device to power the radio station.
Don't tell anyone.
Don't say it on the radio. Anyway, the
generators are lifesavers.
Yeah. I asked what the reactor room was, and he said never open that door, and I just left it at that. So anyway, the weapons grade is much higher enrichment. The argument, and Benjamin Netanyahu in Israel went crazy on this and said, look, they can enrich to weapons grade up to 20% and even to 90% purity in weeks. They still have the centrifuges. They still have the capability to do that. And the U.S. says, well, we're going to keep an eye on that while we continue negotiations. So Netanyahu says they gave away the farm. The U.S. says, look, at least we're talking. So I'm just curious, what do you think?
I'm just so sad we couldn't get dragged into another useless war in the Middle East.
Oh, yeah, that would be nice.
That will be in there for 10 years. It's so sad. We're losing our American values. You know, what happened to the good old days when we just went gung-ho into countries for no reason at all?
And it's too bad we didn't have a Republican cowboy president in the White House.
Exactly.
Because we could have gotten involved in the
done.
Third war. So, exactly.
God, I would have loved to have a beer with that man.
I think what may happen, you know, you could. He still hangs out in Texas. So.
Yikes.
Of course, you don't want to hang out in Texas. If you hung out in Louisiana, maybe you'd have a beer with him. One of the controversies here is it's like, well, we'll cut you a deal. And the president, actually, President Obama, had already lowered some of the sanctions without even telling anybody some weeks ago. And there was a little bit of a scandal there, which, of course, doesn't get reported. Because
of course, everything the president does is a scandal.
Exactly. You know. And it's never reported in the liberal mainstream media. Yeah, you know, we should just record that and just play it over and over again because I know you've heard it before. Anyway, I don't know. There are folks who argue that that at least Iran is at the table.
Exactly.
And before they were stonewalling, at least we're talking, and that's progress, and that diplomacy involves some give and some take. And
exactly.
So it's a compelling argument.
That's such common sense. You're not sounding like a real Republican at the moment.
Okay, well, Fareed Zakaria said it. He said, look, and I'll make fun of this. He said his headline was, imagine the alternative, no deal at all. Well, no deal at all is where we were, which was strangling restrictions on their trade. And those sanctions were clearly having some effect because they were having real difficulty, I think, progressing. When you collapse a country's economy, it tends to have an effect on their ability to continue their weapons program.
Well, it also has an effect on their civilians as well, which I believe is something we're trying to avoid.
Well, no, I think the policy in the U.S., frankly, probably was to foment dissent among the public and to try to get them to overthrow at least Ahmadinejad. Now, Rouhani...
Yes, because we have such a good track record in America of overthrowing regimes and having it end up just as well as we wanted it to.
Went just well in Latin America,
yeah.
And Vietnam.
Worked in Grenada.
Problems. So, yeah, for a little while. for a couple of weeks.
Exactly. Until we have to just go in again.
Exactly. But I think that was the issue. Now, the concern now is Israel won't feel any such compunction. Israel's motivation is to defend themselves. Now, to...
Yes, to defend themselves, well, to I say with air quotes.
To the, well, but you can't wait until somebody launches a nuke and then go respond. You sort of have to...
No, you just steal their land first. So. Isn't that what the Israelis did?
Not from Iran. Not yet. Give them some time.
Give them, exactly. Give them time.
I will say one benefit is Rouhani is not out calling for destruction of Israel and for wiping them off the map like Ahmadinejad was.
And which, of course, we have
refreshing.
To reiterate to the public, these people have no power because they are not the supreme leader of Iran, so they literally have no power. They're talking heads.
Yeah, if your first name is not Ayatollah, you're really
exactly.
powerless in that country. So it's a valid point. But anyway, it'll be interesting to see where that goes over the next 6 months. It took just a few minutes for Netanyahu to get the president on the phone, apparently, and scream in his ear for a little while about what a terrible deal this was. But it'll also be interesting to see where we go over the next 6 months. And again, there are lots of players, the U.S., Britain, to add some diversity, China, Russia, Germany. Earlier, we were teasing France, but France was the hard-nosed party some weeks ago in this negotiation, which, again, I have trouble even saying. It's just funny. But a really interesting group of people with different interests who I think are going to help keep everybody's nose clean. So it'll be interesting to see where it goes.
And we can always just go to war.
You know,
we like war.
We can also, war is profitable, especially for Halliburton and the like.
Exactly.
The other thing is you can reinstitute the sanctions in fairly short order. And that was a point John Kerry made that point. So, you know, I
and
think
there's also precedent that we could target sites with strikes like Clinton did in the 90s to set back Iraq and their weapons production.
An empty tent in the desert like Clinton did in the 90s? Like that. Okay,
of
fine.
Of course. Let's take shots at Bill Clinton.
Well, take shots at John Kerry instead. So,
John Kerry would have been such a great pair.
Is it true that we can institute the sanctions again? Would that it were. Would that it were. Okay, so the other big issue is one of our favorite stories this week. I just love this one. Little news over at the Evil Empire across the state. Don't you love this story?
Absolutely.
Yeah, it seems to me if you want to make friends, the best way to make friends is to viscerally insult them in some really powerful physical way, and they're going to come around to your side of thinking, don't you think? I think that's going to work. So
there's nothing I love more than middle-class white kids acting like they're so oppressed because there are so many illegal immigrants running around the country.
So no better way for the young conservatives of Texas, I should say the young conservatives of the University of Texas, because that's where this happened. This is the same group, and I'll revisit their bake sale in a minute. But they decided a good way to draw awareness and bring people around to their side was to play a catch an illegal immigrant game on the University of Texas campus. They were going to hang signs on people that said illegal immigrant, and then people were encouraged to go around, grab them, round them up, bring them to whatever headquarters was, and they'd get a $25 gift certificate from the Young Conservatives of Texas.
I think any of those people need $25. Daddy's oil money pays for everything. Come on. Up the ante a little bit.
I think this is a great, warm-hearted, nice outreach, you know, reaching your hand across the aisle to try to bring Latinos into the Republican Party, don't you think?
Absolutely.
Isn't this going to win them friends among Latinos?
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Feel-good Thanksgiving story of the year.
Exactly, which I'm so glad you mentioned Thanksgiving, because the point needs to be made to these young conservatives of Texas. You know, on Thanksgiving week, if they don't like illegal immigrants, then they can go back to England or Germany or France or wherever they came from, because they're the real illegal immigrants. I'm sure they're Native American somewhere that would be more than happy to have their land back.
And a great irony here, the first, you know, the conquistadors, of course, the first really marauding Europeans were Latinos, which I just think is kind of funny. So ironic. But anyway, so the YCT reaching across the table, and rather than shaking hands, slapping the illegal immigrants, and at the same time, with their other hand, handing $25 to an upper middle class white kid who doesn't really need it. So I just think a brilliant policy, and I am not going to take sides with
God
the young conservatives.
Is there
a limit
Texas.
On the number of illegals they could turn in?
No, and it was just however many people they hung signs on. The quote illegals that they were catching, of course, were just other suburban white kids wearing a sign that said illegal immigrants. So the whole thing was kind of absurd.
I would be really afraid that someone would die in there. You know, I'm sure there's a lot of gun-toting people there.
Not on that campus in Austin. Maybe
Please.
Here in West Texas, but geez, not
That's
in Austin for
thought.
Crying out loud. No, not a chance. They're all driving Volvos and wearing Birkenstocks and trimming their beards.
Well, apparently they ain't too liberal if they're hosting a catching illegal immigrants.
Yeah, that one small group of the YCT. Their previous awareness campaign was when they decided to have a bake sale, and they charged less for minorities to buy cupcakes and cookies because they wanted to illustrate the woes of affirmative action, that folks with money who tend to be white pay for social programs that support people who tend to be minority. Again, a great way to make friends in more diverse parts of the
town.
And,
of course, a terrible, inaccurate representation of what affirmative action actually does.
Well, exactly. So. And my favorite response to this was our own Reggie Rutledge, who said, "Man, I love that. I can get cookies for less than you guys." So I thought that was a reasonable, rational, smart response from a student who just needed, to save some money. Last topic, this is kind of fun because the three of us, Jordan, Derek, and myself, all had the same opinion about this. We want to talk about the big controversy of the week, Xbox versus PS4. So Xbox One, PS4.
Neither.
Derek, what were you saying? What do you still have?
I still have my Atari 2600.
Yes! Love that. I had
all of its 8-bit 14 color glory.
Hey, look, one button. It's just easier to play. It's more manageable, you know.
I will argue to the end that Pac-Man and the original Donkey Kong is more entertaining than anything on these new consoles.
Yeah. I would even add Pong to that list.
Oh, Pong was my first. It's funny because when all my friends in college were skipping classes and playing pinball, God, see, it's so long I can't even remember. I was skipping classes and playing Pong because it was the first video game in there. And then, of course,
were that deaf, dumb, and blind kid that played a main pinball.
No, I was never that good. Love the song, the rock opera, but no, was not a fan of the Who either. Sorry.
Oh, I don't like the Who either. Beatles. I think they're the most. Now, the Beatles.
An interesting song.
The Beatles we're gonna have a huge fight over eventually because I don't understand how any human being doesn't like the Beatles. Derek, you have to back me up on this. You're a radio guy.
Early Beatles, yes. The later acts, I could see where they kind of lost track.
Well, see, I'm also a huge fan of early Beatles as well, but just how can any human being not like the Beatles? They changed music. They are the reason music exists.
I would say music existed long before the Beatles.
I'm thinking music's been around for
a while. In fact, I would say there's one local guy that was probably taking a lot of credit or given credit for how the Beatles came up with their name.
Absolutely, but I'm also a huge Buddy Holly fan. Love Buddy Holly, but just how anybody could not like the Beatles doesn't make sense to me. I can understand you being a Christian. I can understand you being a Republican. I can understand you being a conservative, a libertarian, a Tea Partier.
I can
understand all of these things. I will never understand how anyone could not like the Beatles. And that's my rant for the day.
So dislike of the Beatles is not covered under the Affordable Care Act, is that what we're saying?
No,
it should be a one-way ticket to a mental evaluation.
I like it. We better leave it at that. It's funny, though, because I've been trying through my Tea Party affiliation, et cetera, to be an outlier, and I finally found the way to be the farthest outlier possible, which is I'm not a Beatles fan, so there. Hey, listen, thanks for joining us for this week's Devil's Advocate. Again, a special best of edition, not because the other hosts weren't here. I mean, not because it's a historical edition, just because we had fun. Jordan's been wanting to have at me for a while, and nicely done, as usual. Derek Ginter, behind the glass, thank you for expertly doing what you teach all the students.
Thanks for having me.
Appreciate it. So we'll catch you guys next week, 5 o'clock, right here on KTXT on Wednesday.